As you have no doubt learned before, marketing consists of four elements: the product, its promotion, its placement, and its price. The first three elements are about creating value in the marketplace. The last element is all about capturing some, but not all, of that value in the profit you earn. As the authors say, if the first three elements sow the seeds of business success, effective pricing is the harvest. The authors' research suggests that companies that adopt a value-based pricing strategy and build the organizational capabilities to implement it earn 24% higher profits than their peers. Join us for the next 12 minutes as we figure out exactly how to do it. How not to price? First, we need to start by looking at what not to do. There are three pricing strategies that some companies adopt that leads to suboptimal results. Cost plus pricing. We'll start with the easiest one. The costs of your product usually have nothing to do with the value it creates for your customer. So pricing based on cost is never the right strategy to maximize profits. Customer-driven pricing. Figuring out what price your customer is willing to pay is not the way to maximize profits. The purpose of strategic pricing is to capture more value, not necessarily by making more sales. Some marketers confuse the second with the first. The question you should be asking yourself instead is, what is our product worth to this customer and how can we better communicate that value and justify the price? Share-driven pricing. Trying to capture the most market share is ultimately a fool's errand in 99.9% of the cases. Figuring out what prices you need to charge in order to meet your sales or market share objectives leads to poor decisions. Instead, you should be looking to find the combination of margin and market share that maximizes profitability over the long run. Strategic pricing. All great pricing strategies are based on three principles. They are value-based, proactive, and profit-driven. Value-based means that there will be differences in pricing across customers or applications that reflect differences in value to those customers. Thus, a key element of strategic pricing strategy is your segmentation strategy. There are six steps to create a values-based segmentation strategy. Step number one, determine your basic segmentation criteria. The inputs here are basically any and all research about your market that already exists. There's no need to reinvent the wheel here. It could include industry databases, government statistics, or any other research your company has already done. The outputs in this step are a preliminary set of customer needs and a provisional set of unmet customer needs. Check in with your salespeople to make sure you're on the right track. Number two, identify discriminating value drivers. The inputs of this step include in-depth interviews with customers about how and why they choose the products in your market. And the output of this step includes the list of value drivers in your market ranked by their ability to discriminate among customers, an explanation of why each driver adds value, and whether or not customers in each segment recognize that value. Step number three, determine your operational constraints and advantages. Figure out where you can deliver value drivers more efficiently and at a lower cost than your competitors. Also figure out where you're constrained in delivering on value drivers by your resources and operations. The output of this step is to have a clear picture of where you have a sustainable competitive advantage and therefore which customers you can serve better than your competitors. Step number four, create primary and secondary segments. Your primary segmentation should be an obvious outcome of the previous steps and focus on your most important differentiator. Your secondary segmentation takes your primary segment and puts them into distinct subgroups according to your second most important differentiator. Step number five, create detailed segment descriptions. Next, you'll describe your segments in plain language so your salespeople and marketing people know exactly what segments you'll be focusing on. And finally, step number six, develop segment metrics and fences. Finally, you'll create metrics based on the segments you've created and determine how to get your customers to accept the prices you've set for the different segments. Price structure. Next, we move on to create the actual pricing structure. There are three mechanisms you can use, sometimes individually, but usually in combination, to create a segmented price structure: offer configurations, price metrics, and price fences. Offer configuration. Creating different offer configurations is one of the easiest ways to serve different segments because customers will self-select the options that made the most sense given their circumstances. Often, this means bundling together features of a product to serve the different segments most profitably. However, sometimes it makes sense to unbundle features when it helps you enter new markets. Price metrics. This is the unit you use to determine volume and is usually in the form of dollars per X. The problem with most pricing metrics is that they're often set by default or how your market traditionally approaches it. The issue is that you can leave a lot of money on the table this way. There are five criteria to consider as you determine the most profitable price metrics to use. A great price metric, 1, tracks with differences in value across segments. 2, tracks with differences in cost to serve across customer segments. 3, is easy to implement without any ambiguity about what charges the customer has incurred. 4, makes your pricing appear attractive in comparison to your competitors. And 5, aligns with how buyers experience the value in use of your product or service. Price fences. Finally, we have the concept of price fences, where there's a different value, and thus different prices, even when all of the features and benefits remain the same. It's defined as fixed criteria that customers must meet in order to qualify for a lower price. Price fences around age are common, with many theaters and museums charging less for children and seniors. Other common price fences include status, such as discounts for full-time students or employees. Most price fences fall into one of the following four categories. 1, buyer identification fences. A barber charging different prices for short hair or long hair is an example. 2, purchase location fences. You'll notice when you travel that gas is cheaper in some locations rather than others. 3, time of purchase fences. Early bird specials are a common one here. And 4, purchase quantity fences. There will often be discounts for purchase quantities. Price setting. Now that you've decided on your pricing structure, it's time to actually decide the prices you'll charge for all of the different variations you've created. There are 5 steps to this process. Step 1, define the viable price range. Your floor price for a positively differentiated product is the price of the next best competitive alternative. For a negatively differentiated product, it is the variable cost of delivering the product. Your price ceiling for a positively differentiated product is the maximum amount a fully informed customer would pay. For a negatively differentiated product, it is the price of the next best competitive alternative. Step 2, make strategic choices. Next, there are 3 alternative strategies you can explore. Option 1, skim the market. This is where you go after only the most profitable customers in a market. Luxury brands follow this strategy. The strategy usually requires a substantial commitment to communicate your differentiating factors. Option 2, penetrate the market. This is where you set a price low enough to attract and hold a large base of customers. This only works if a large portion of the market is willing to change suppliers because of a lower price. Option 3, neutral pricing. This means making a decision to not use price alone to gain market share or to restrict it. This is the option that most companies adopt. Step 3, assess break-even sales changes. Economic theorists suggest that in order to set proper prices, you should focus on mapping your demand curve, the number of units you would theoretically sell at each price point, and then optimize for the total profit. The problem is that it's almost always impractical to do that. Instead, focus on 2 simple questions to clarify your thinking. How much sales volume can I afford to lose before a particular price increase would become unprofitable? And how much sales volume do I have to gain in order for a particular price increase to improve profitability? Step 4, gauge price elasticity. Next, estimate how sensitive your market is to pricing changes. Running price experiments and purchase intention surveys are practical and cost-effective ways to do that. Step 5, account for psychological factors. Finally, after all the logical steps are done, we must take into account one very important factor. We are dealing with human beings that don't make decisions rationally. We'll cover many of those ways in the next section on communicating value. Price and value communication. Now that you have your pricing figured out, you need to communicate it to your target audience. It requires you to clearly communicate the quantifiable benefits you've figured out in the previous steps, but it also requires you to understand the psychological factors that come into play when a person makes a purchasing decision. Here are a number of things to keep in mind as you decide how to convey value to your customers. Competitive reference effect. If the customer has little knowledge of the category, they'll often pick an option in the middle of the pack. Switching cost effect. Customers are less sensitive to price if there's a high switching cost between the suppliers. Difficult comparison effect. Customers are less sensitive to price when they have difficulty comparing alternatives. End benefit effect. A customer's price sensitivity is influenced by how important the end benefit is to them. Price quality effect. In luxury good and exclusive product marketplaces, the price is a measure of quality. In the customer's mind, higher price equals higher quality. Expenditure effect. Customers are more price sensitive when the expenditure is larger, either in total amount or as a percentage of the budget. And finally, fairness effect. Customers are more willing to accept market prices for one-time transactions. However, when they anticipate future interactions, they expect the price to be fair or reasonable. Pricing policy. Once you've determined your pricing and how you'll communicate it, you'll need to actually get your customers to accept your pricing policies. Good policies allow you to achieve your short-term objectives without causing your customers, sales reps, or competitors to adapt their behavior that undermines your ability to hit volume and profit targets. Bad policies do the opposite. For a number of reasons, you should have a pricing policy that covers the most common circumstances you'll encounter and then ensure you stick to them across the board. Here are the different items you should have a documented policy around. Responding to price objections. Implementing price increases. Transitioning from a flexible to a policy-based pricing. If you don't have pricing policies today, you'll need a plan for a transition period. And promotional pricing. If you're going to employ promotional pricing, you'll need strict and clear guidelines around it. Price competition. Engaging in price wars with competitors never ends well. So, unless you've chosen a low-cost pricing strategy, the general rule is to avoid it at all costs. However, if you do find yourself in a situation where a competitor changes their pricing strategy and you feel like you need to react, ask yourself the following 5 questions first. Is there a response that would cost less than the preventable sales loss? Focus your reactive price cut only on those customers likely to be attracted by the competitor's offer. 2. If you respond, is your competitor willing and able to cut price again to reestablish the price difference? 3. Will the multiple responses required to match a competitor cost less than the avoidable sales losses? 4. Is your position in other geographic or product markets at risk if a competitor is successful in gaining share? And finally, 5. Does the value of the markets at risk justify the cost of response?